Beneath the headlines, behind the timelines, there is a story no one wants you to find. Welcome to Some Unapproved Thinking, where forgotten truths, buried patterns, and invisible systems rise to the surface. You weren't crazy. You were just early. Let's begin.
Bells. You hear them every single day, and you've stopped noticing they're there. That sound, the one that cuts through your morning commute, your school day, your work shift, the one that's been synchronized across centuries and continents, church bells, school bells, clock tower bells. The sound so ordinary, so embedded in the fabric of public life that you'd never suspect it was the subject of a coordinated global campaign to erase it from existence. But the evidence is there. If you know where to look, this is Some Unapproved Thinking.
Thank you to our sponsor, the Dark Horse Entrepreneur Podcast. Unlock your potential with the Dark Horse Entrepreneur AI Escape Plan, the podcast empowering hardworking parents to break free from the 9-to-5 grind through AI-powered side hustles. Check them out at darkhorseentrepreneur.com. Now back to the show.
In 1996, New York City's Mayor Rudolph Giuliani pushed through a noise ordinance that specifically targeted excessive bell ringing in commercial and residential zones. Not sirens, not car horns, not construction equipment. Bells? Within 5 years, more than 300 churches in Manhattan had voluntarily restricted their bell schedules, not because the law forced them, but because the cultural and civic pressure made it untenable not to. The timing is odd, right? Because that same year, 1996, the city of London passed similar regulations. Then Berlin, then Tokyo, then Sydney. All within 18 months. Governments that don't talk to each other. Cultures that don't share political systems. Yet they moved on bells with surgical precision. You might think noise pollution, urban development, natural evolution of city planning. That's what you're supposed to think. That's the narrative they want in your head. But here's what the official timelines don't show you. Bells have a documented history as tools of social control. This isn't fringe theory. It's the academic backbone of campanology, the formal study of bells and their role in human civilization. Medieval churches didn't ring bells for piety alone. They rang them to regulate labor. The bell determined when peasants woke, when they worked, when they stopped, when they prayed. Big Ben has been doing this to London since 1859. The Liberty Bell was ringing Philadelphia into civic compliance before the revolution was even finished. The Tsar Kolokol, the largest bell ever cast, sitting in the Moscow Kremlin, was so powerful, so symbolically loaded, that when it cracked in 1737, the Tsar had it buried rather than let anyone see it broken. The bell was the first universal clock. And it belonged to the church and the crown. For 800 years, every synchronized bell across Europe was a thread in a single invisible tapestry of power. And the people wearing the tapestry knew something you don't. Bells have a frequency, a harmonic signature. Studies in acoustics and auditory neuroscience have documented something called auditory entrainment, the measurable phenomenon where external sound frequencies synchronize with human brainwave patterns. EEG research on rhythmic auditory stimulation shows changes in cortical activation, attention span, and temporal awareness. The peer-reviewed literature on this is real, even if it's buried in journals no one reads. The application to bells, large, resonant, geographically distributed bells rung on coordinated schedules, was understood long before the modern era. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's acoustics. The pattern repeats. In 1892, the Russian Tsar initiated a bell silencing program across portions of the Russian Empire, not to reduce noise, but to consolidate power in regions where Orthodox bell ringing had become a rallying signal for dissidents. Because synchronized bells meant synchronized thoughts, and synchronized thoughts meant synchronized resistance. You silence the bell, you silence the metronome of collective consciousness. Then came the revolution. By 1929, the Soviet government had issued Decree No. 118, which formally banned all bell ringing across the USSR. By 1930, authorities had begun systematically melting down church bells, ultimately destroying more than 10,000 of them. The official reason, metal for industrialization. The real reason, break the cycle. Break the circadian rhythm of an entire civilization. Sever the auditory anchor that had kept communities synchronized for centuries. And here's the detail that almost no one knows. The bells of the Danilov Monastery in Moscow, some of the most historically significant in Russia, were sold to Harvard University in 1930 to save them from the smelters. Harvard kept them for 73 years. The Soviet government knew exactly what they were doing. They didn't just want the metal, they wanted the silence. Here's what's chilling. The pattern didn't stop. In the 1950s, during the same decade, America was building its interstate highway system, infrastructure that would bypass small towns, rural areas, places where bell towers had dictated the rhythm of life for generations. The Federal Communications Commission began issuing permits to radio stations with unprecedented specificity. These stations were told where to broadcast, how many watts, on which frequencies, and, crucially, in which communities the radio would replace the bell. Technology would replace tradition, but the synchronization would continue. Just invisibly now. You think the internet is neutral, that social media algorithms are accidents of engineering? They're not. They're the most sophisticated bell system ever constructed, what behavioral economists now call the attention economy. B.F. Skinner documented this in the 1950s, that variable reward schedules, unpredictable, intermittent reinforcement, produce the most compulsive, hardest to break behavioral loops in any organism. The slot machine runs on this. So does your notification tray. Every ping is a variable reward schedule. Every scroll is auditory entrainment without the sound. The algorithm rings in your pocket. It synchronizes your attention across continents in real time. You scroll when the algorithm decides. You react when it times the content. You believe what it amplifies. The bell was always going to evolve. It just needed to become digital. But why now? Why the 1990s specifically? Well, because that's when they realized the old bells had become too obvious. Too retro. Too something that people were starting to notice. The digital generation was arriving. You wouldn't trust a church bell, but you'd trust an app. You'd think you were making choices when you were responding to rhythms engineered by people you'd never meet, in rooms you'd never enter, working from playbooks written 40 years before you were born. The cities that restricted the bells first, New York, London, Berlin, they were the test cities, the proof of concept. What happened after? Those cities didn't fall apart. Life continued. Schools kept running. Time kept moving. Nobody missed it. And that silence told the architects of this system everything they needed to know. You don't need the bell if you control what rings in the silence. Start noticing it now. Every notification, every algorithm, every piece of content that feels perfectly timed to your mood, that's the bell. It evolved, it got smarter, it got personal, and most people don't realize they're still living in the tower, still being called to work, still being synchronized to a rhythm they can't see. Here's the uncomfortable part, the part that changes everything. You can't unsynchronize yourself. Nope. You can't turn off your phone permanently. You can't live outside the system because the system now is the world. The bells are gone. But the bells never mattered. What mattered was the synchronization. The idea that somewhere, someone was keeping time for you, that you weren't responsible for your own rhythm, that you could blame the bell for the hours you wasted, the thoughts you had, the person you became. The real scandal isn't that they removed the bells. It's that you thank them for it. Because the bells were loud. The bells were oppressive. The bells were something you could point to and say, that's what's controlling me. But the digital bell, the synchronized notification, the algorithmically timed content hitting your brain at 2:47 a.m. when your circadian rhythm has dropped your cortisol to its lowest point and your resistance to suggestion is at its peak, you don't see that as control. You see it as connection. You see it as choice. That's the genius of the shift. That's why the campaign was global. That's why governments that couldn't agree on trade, on military strategy, on human rights, could somehow align on deprioritizing bells. Because this wasn't about noise. It was about invisibility. The moment bells became optional, the moment they moved from mandatory synchronization to nostalgic decoration, that was the moment the system became perfect. Perfect because you chose to participate. Perfect because you preferred the invisible rhythm. Perfect because you stopped noticing you were being controlled at all. The bell smashing campaign wasn't a conspiracy to free you from oppression. It was a conspiracy to move oppression so far underground that you'd mistake it for freedom. They didn't want to control you through bells anymore. Bells made people suspicious. Bells made people angry. Bells created a focal point for resistance. Campanology, the study of how bells shaped civilization, documents this clearly. The bell was always a political object, which is exactly why replacing it had to be a political act. So they replaced the bell with something you loved, something you'd defend as your right, something you'd pay for, something you'd carry with you, something that would ring in your pocket, in your hand, in your dreams, and you'd call it choice. The old bell system eventually failed because it was not transparent. You could see the tower, you could name the oppressor, you could smash the bell. And in Moscow, in 1930, they did exactly that 10,000 times. But this new system, this one doesn't fail. Because it's distributed, it's personal, it's you. That's why the noise ordinances passed so quietly. That's why no one noticed. That's why the bells disappeared without protest. Because somewhere, at the highest levels of government and technology, they'd already figured out that you didn't need to ban the bell, you just needed to offer you something better. Something you'd choose over the bell yourself. And you did. Every time you check your phone, every time you wait for the notification, every time you synchronize your life to content you didn't create, following rhythms you don't understand, you're ringing the bell yourself now. The attention economy runs on your participation. The variable reward schedule only works if you keep pulling the lever. The system works because you've internalized the metronome. The control is perfect because it feels like freedom. The global smashing scandal was never about bells. It was about teaching you to hold the hammer. So tell me, what time is it? This has been Some Unapproved Thinking. Tracy, out.
If this story didn't sit right with you, good. You're not here to be comforted. You're here to see what others overlook. Thanks for exploring Some Unapproved Thinking. Learn more at someunapprovedthinking.com. New episodes drop weekly. Subscribe, share, and keep questioning, because the pattern's still playing out, and next time, we're going deeper.